Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 340 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I've done this before, but I want to yell a big, hey now, but I don't want to, like, make everyone's levels go crazy, so, hey now.
Right. And I almost called you Leonard.
Oh, boy.
Because I was overthinking it.
Yeah, I was thinking that the other day. You know, there's people who get upset, like, your World Wrestling Entertainment superstars who had different names before they came onto the, on the indies or in different promotions before they come to the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll still call them by their old names.
Right.
But it gets to a point where you've had your WWE name longer than your indie name, and I think it's at that point where I can start calling you that name.
Ah.
Whereas I did have the name Joe for, you know, the first however many years of my life, but then I was Leonard for 12 years.
Right.
So I will more or less forgive any slip up for the next 12 years.
That sounds like a good plan. See, the way I do is you can only use real names if you're proposing to people.
Okay.
Oh, and that's goodness. It. And I'm mad that, you know, nobody called him Shoot Trash after that.
Oh, I'm sure they did, but they have me blocked so they can go eat it.
So how was your weekend?
Busy and tiring, man. Went to the movies, had shoot work. And watched WrestleMania for 7 hours.
I had shoot work, the Cinnabon. I had WrestleMania, and I watched the last 6 episodes of Iron Fist.
You know what? We're talking about it now. We're at the beginning of the show. I have not watched it. I'm woefully behind on all of the shows. So you've watched the complete of Iron Fist.
Right.
What is your verdict? Is this worth my time?
Yes, it is. I liked it.
Look at this.
I liked it. I thought it was really good without spoiling anything. I won't be like, this happened, that happened. The problems I have with it are one, and Danny Rand never shaves throughout the whole series. And I don't like Iron Fist with a beard. And two, they got an actor who doesn't know. You could obviously tell has no experience with martial arts whatsoever, which is bad in a show where the lead character knows kung fu. And, like, you know when you're watching martial arts stuff and they're just, like, doing moves in the dojo or whatever, like, you know, their forms or whatever you want to call them?
Sure.
Right. It looks very bad. You're like, this is a guy who's not smooth, who's not whatever. But that gets better as time goes on. And at times they're kind of like, all right, well, you know, in this scene, you're going to have a hoodie on. All right, stand over there, Finn, and we're going to get the stunt double to do your kung fu moves. And it works. The villain I had a problem with in the beginning, but it all gets explained as the show goes on. I liked it better than Luke Cage.
Ooh, really?
Yes, I liked it better than Luke Cage because I think Luke Cage becomes a complete and total mess in the second half.
Oh,
and
man.
The ending to Luke Cage to me, the ending is so dumb that there's a problem that I have with the ending that I'm like, you take away all, like, oh my God, this happened to Luke Cage because something else happens. And you're like, this doesn't make any sense what you're trying to do here. And, but as a whole, I think Iron Fist gets stronger as the series goes on, while Luke Cage gets weaker.
Ah.
And I believe leave me with a good ending because that's the last thing I'm going to remember of your show. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to remember the beginning of Luke Cage that was good. I'm going to remember the last thing that you did, and it wasn't very good to me.
Interesting.
If that makes any sense whatsoever.
It does, even though I've not watched all of Luke Cage.
Right. So,
but many people were complaining, of course, that the main thing was the fight choreography and that sort of stuff.
Right.
And the interview with the lead actor, Finn Balor, or whatever his name is.
Right.
He had said that because of the production crunch that they were on, like, they were literally showing him the fight choreography 15 seconds before they would shoot the scene.
That's what I read, too, so I'm willing to maybe forgive it. But next season, you can't. You cannot. You know what I mean? You have to have it. Or wherever, like Defenders or whatever is next with him.
I think they announced the date for Defenders recently.
Yes, they did. It's like, I'm trying to say August something, because it's not mentioned in the promo, but they said there's a website in the ad that if you actually go to, it gives you the premiere date.
Come on.
Yes.
Stop making me do so much work. Just tell me when the show comes out.
Exactly. I'm glad somebody, you know, did some digging and got it, so I didn't have to.
But. Do you want me to watch your show, or do you want me to solve riddles? I can't do both.
That's right. I'm sorry I'm not Batman today.
Right. I'm doing one or the other, not both.
Right. But so I hope you'll enjoy it if you get to see it.
One of these days. Well, you know, we'll kind of get into this a little bit later on in the TV talk, but with a couple weeks of free time, I might be able to get caught up on things.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So. I might finish Daredevil Season 1 first.
Oh, my goodness. That's right. I am the real Daredevil fan on this show.
Correct.
But would you like to know what we have on the show this week?
Todd, I would love to know what we're going to discuss on our podcast today.
That's right. A comic book creator who's a favorite of mine asked for help. Movie news, a DC project with a more surprising director than the project being made to me, and also an independent creator who can always use more money has a movie coming out. Marvel also has a big summit and lots of, I'm not even going to go individually, tons of crazy news coming out of that, which blew my mind. Also, con news, free digital books and sales. What we're going to read this week, we have, you read Marvel Black Widow number 12, and we also have a special guest coming on to discuss the Hanna-Barbera DC crossover annual.
That's correct. That would be Craig from Puzzle Warriors 3 will be joining us this week. He kind of said he put the request out into the ether when the book was first solicited some 2-3 months ago. And he kind of just said to the ether, hey, I want to be on Longbox Heroes to discuss these. And we're making a young man's dream come true.
That's right. The ether answered.
Right. Oh.
The ether bunny delivered the message.
I would title the show that, but again, I don't think you could do that aether as a symbol thing, and that'll just cause more confusion in me trying to upload the show.
That is true. What we're looking forward to this week, then Joe and Todd have issues with the Marvel 2-in-1 annual number 7, Big Thing Extravaganza. And at the end, we're going to have big spoiler-filled talk of The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and the season finale of The Walking Dead.
That's right. So we got a lot to cover. We got a big show this week.
That's right. We already started strong with Iron Fist talk. Now we can bust right into the news.
Right. So you had mentioned about the creator that you're a fan of, and I'm a fan of him too as well. And that would be Peter David. Recently ran into a little tax kerfuffle.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, a TV show that he made several years ago called Space Cases. Todd, being a Peter David fan, are you aware of this show?
I am unaware of a lot of Peter David's writing credits.
Okay.
On TV shows.
So apparently it was a mid to late 90s Canadian sci-fi fiction show that aired on Nickelodeon.
Ah, that makes sense.
So he made a bunch of money from that show, and he was all ready to pay the taxes on it, and then the money was gone due to a possible marital concern.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out, here we are now some 20 years later, that the IRS figured out, hey, he never paid his taxes on that.
Mm-hmm.
So with penalties and all, he owes the IRS $88,000.
That's right.
Which I'm sure he just has in some of his couch cushions.
That is true. So he's asking for help from the fans.
Right. So you, as a fan of Peter David, I'll ask your opinion and then I'll kind of get into things myself.
On the opinion of whether or not to donate?
Well, all of it. Anything. Whatever you want to talk about.
One, if you're going to donate, pay him in cash because he's having a bit of a tag problem. But I look at it as I can't donate. Not that I don't want to, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, I have thrown money in his direction for years on every project. And I get it. If people want to help him, that's fine. But I don't know. It just seems to me I have a lot of, you know, bills myself, and I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be nice about this.
So the one thing that I'll say with this, he does have a GoFundMe page set up, which is one of those like tiered reward, like tiered sort of systems. Like, hey, donate me money. A friend of mine, one of the wrestlers who had his own, who ran his own show this past weekend at WrestleMania, had a show that was called Joey Janela's Spring Break. And he's kind of poked fun at other people who, other wrestlers who in the past who have done GoFundMe of like, hey, I want to become a World Wrestling Entertainment superstar. This GoFundMe is to pay for my room and board while I move to Florida and devote all my time to becoming a WWE superstar.
Makes sense.
Or, I'm a trip and I need new luggage. Or, I broke my laptop. And so forth. So his was to fulfill his lifelong dream to wrestle on the moon. So that's what his GoFundMe is for.
That I would give to.
I think he's close.
Apollo 16, would it be? 15?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I can't find.
Maybe he met it, and they took it down. That's probably what happened.
He has $35 raised so far.
That will get him halfway to the moon.
So, anywho, I will give Peter David this. As he gets to these different little goals and so forth, he is going to start giving out quote-unquote rewards, which you really don't need to do with GoFundMe. Your GoFundMe is essentially, hey, listen, I need money, give me money, and me saying thank you eventually is your reward.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to be putting out an original short story that he did that was never published. Then he's going to be having different rewards as he hits the different goals. 55, 75, 88,000, of course. And apparently Robert Kirkman donated a ton of money to it as well.
Right.
So good for him.
Right.
And I have donated to people's GoFundMe before, but typically it's for people who I know and have met in person and maybe even have their phone number in my phone.
Gotcha.
Who have fallen on hard times that are a little bit more tangible to me than I forgot my taxes 20 years ago.
Right. And I have like a standing like, and I've seen people who like famous people, you know, comic people or whatever. It's like, well, I need this. And, you know, I've, you know, given you enjoyment in the past with my creations. And I'm like, so I think like you can help me out. And I'm kind of like, you didn't give it to me for free. So it's kind of, I just feel like I come off sounding like a terrible person, but I don't know. I can't do it myself right now.
I save all my remarks about being a terrible person for off air. Remind me about this after we're done recording.
All right. I'm writing something down.
So if you're a big Peter David fan and you would like to contribute and help him out, that you've loved his work on Fallen Angels that much.
Hey, that's his best stuff. Don't make fun of that.
That's why I said it. I'm not making fun of it. I know that's a hot button issue for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you're so inclined, if you're, you know, we'll kind of get into some of the other comic book stuff that's going on. If you're maybe dropping a book and you've got an extra $3 or $4 or $5 and you're a Peter David fan, throw it to him. Maybe it'll make you feel good about yourself today.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on to some movie announcements that happened. Variety reported this past week that one of the next films in the DC Extended Film Universe is going to be Batgirl. And Batgirl is going to be, at the very least, have some sort of involvement from Joss Whedon. Whether he's going to be writing, directing, producing, or all of it, he is going to be involved with the Batgirl film in the DC Expanded Universe. And, of course, there's already speculation of that we've seen hints of this before, who's going to be rumored to play her, all this sort of stuff. But, hey, Joss Whedon's doing a DC movie. What?
Illegal? That's like Scott. That's like Scott Steiner or Zack Steiner going over and doing, you know, some Marvel movie. It just doesn't work. You're not allowed.
That's what we call corporate sabotage if that happens.
All this is sabotage?
Yes. Now, everything comes back to wrestling for me, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are people who are conspiracy theorists when it comes to the world of professional wrestling.
Right.
There are people who legitimately believe that Vince McMahon let Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, and Vince Russo out of their contracts so that they would get hired by WCW and fire and destroy it from within.
Moles.
There are legitimately people who believe that.
Right. And we never were put a man on the moon.
Right.
But we're going to have somebody wrestle on the moon, so that's okay.
Right. As long as once he gets more than $35 on his Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. GoFundMe.
GoFundMe. Same difference. So, I think whatever exclusivity Joss Whedon had with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I remember them making some sort of announcement either when Age of Ultron was being made or after Age of Ultron came out.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, Joss Whedon would be kind of kept on as, like, a consultant or executive producer or something of that nature, but he would no longer be making any of the films hands-on.
Right. But that probably ran out. That was probably one of those sales clauses,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it's like he wants out, but it's like, you know, the famous, like, you know, late-night talk show clauses where it was like, literally when Johnny Carson left, it was like you can't go work for any other, you know, do any talk shows for X amount of years and stuff like that. So they probably figured, like, at that point, he had made the company the most money. And it was like, we don't want you going over to DC or doing any movies for our rivals. You know, you can't put a lifelong ban on it. So you've put a few years on it. And that probably is up now. And he was always like, he was on that Wonder Woman movie years and years ago.
I remember that.
And I think DC could have had, you know, the Marvel thing that's going on now. But, you know, still it's DC makes money. So yeah, I'm not going to argue that, but it could have been a completely different world where, you know, Joss Whedon was running the DC movies.
Now, the other thing, of course, is to play devil's advocate. We've seen the Warner Brothers DC Cinematic Universe machine break the strongest people.
Mm-hmm.
Is Joss Whedon strong enough to change the machine, to fight the machine, or will he be broken?
I think, like the true brown coat that he is from Firefly, he will survive all the beatings that he'll take and rise up. And no, I just think it's going to be a movie. I don't know.
I don't know. I think a Batgirl movie, with limited ties to the existing stuff that already is out there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tie it in, but let's not tie it in too closely. On its own, could be fun.
Mm-hmm.
That is a movie that has potential to be fun. But then again, it also has potential to have the Jared Leto Joker in it.
Oh, boy.
Right. So let's tread lightly there.
The Killing Joke with Jared Leto.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
So speaking of treading lightly,
mm-hmm.
it was also announced that Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, the folks who brought Preacher to AMC.
Yummy.
The jury's still out on that. Apparently, they are doing such a good job on that they are also going to be adapting Robert Kirkman's other big comic book project, Invincible, for the silver screen.
Ooh, I hope it's as good as the Green Hornet.
What's the one site that I've mentioned before on here? The Outhousers. And again, I hate to say that they're like the Onion of comic book reporting.
But they're the Onion. They're the Onion of comic book reporting.
No, because they don't do, like, fake stories, but they kind of, like, don't take themselves very seriously. Their headline is, "Fresh off the success of Green Hornet."
Oh, boy.
Rogan and Goldberg to adapt Invincible into film.
Yikes.
And then it continues to say, "Good timing with the book ending next year."
Well, then they'll at least know how their franchise is going to end.
Right, right.
See, come on. At this point, it's not really about bringing eyes to the comic. it's about filling Kirkman's massive coffers.
And then a totally true quote from Kirkman in the article. It says, yep. Finally, someone bought this property from me. Only took 14 years.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
I believe he said that, too.
I like Invincible a lot. It definitely has potential. And I hate to say this, but to be a more... not Deadpool,
mm-hmm.
but kind of like a little bit more hard edge superhero movie. Not like Kick-Ass, where it's like in the real world, you know, sort of things. But, you know, Invincible has its ties to, like, you know, there's analogs to Spider-Man in it. There's analogs to Superman in it. There's analogs to all these other different little comic book properties. But then, like, there's many times where it just gets, like, super violent. Like, hyper violent. Mm-hmm. And I could see that with, you know, the bright and shiny colors of the superhero world, with the hyper-violence being interesting.
And the good Seth Rogen jokes.
What? Anyway.
That silence just laid there.
It sure did.
Hmm.
So, speaking of non-controversial issues...
Oh, boy.
We'll start with the good, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel has announced that they may have made a mistake by taking away the digital freebies in their comic books.
That person was fired and things are different now.
Right.
That's all they had to do was add to their press statement.
So starting with May, when Secret Empire comes out, they're going to combine the two offers, where you're going to get the digital copy of the book that you're purchasing, and then one of the three random freebies that they do differently every week.
Sounds like a Hydra plan.
Yeah.
But, but I think it's a brilliant idea, especially on the heels of, you know, they were like, oh, I think we're shutting down our digital sales. And then like an hour later, DC's like, you know what? We're bringing out digital sales. And Marvel was like, oh, God, just stop it. And they had to. There was no way that DC could have done what they did and they take it away. People, I do believe people who bought books because they were $3.99 got free digital sales, then sold those digital for a dollar or whatever it is, because there is a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
That stopped people from buying books. And at one point I read, and I should have sent you the article, where Marvel was sending people who could prove that they bought books, digital freebies. Did you see that?
No.
Where people were complaining and Marvel was rising up to the occasion. And so I guess they just decided, we're done with this. Let's just give them all back.
Now, see, if they were doing that, I'll do it. I'll send you. Here's a picture of me with my arm around the book that I actually purchased. And mm-hmm. here's my digitally redeemed thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I get what you're saying. There was a secondary market for it, of course. Remember there was even a time when you digitally redeemed it, that they would ask you the shop that you purchased it at, and they would give like a couple cents kickback to the shop where you purchased it from?
I don't know. I've never redeemed a digital code from a comic.
They took that away about 2 years ago, but there was a time where they were doing that.
Because then that's extra money out of their pocket.
Well, you know, listen. But then there's the people like you who purchase the books regardless, never redeem those codes, and then those codes expire after a year.
And I've heard they don't, but what do I know?
Okay. So there's a chance that they could, but they say it's only good for a year. But, you know, there's a secondary market, as I mentioned, and there's been many a times where I've picked up a book, and let's say I don't like it. I'm not going to put that digital redeem code. And I will contact, like I'm in a Facebook group, and I'll say to the Facebook group, I'm like, hey, first come, first serve. Here's this code.
Mm-hmm.
Try this book out. And many times, that book may not have been for me, but they hop onto that book, and I just got Marvel a sale by giving that code away. I didn't make any extra money off of that. Now, mm-hmm. granted, I'm not going to buy that book, but I passed the purchasing of that book onto someone else.
Right. I've done that once or a couple of times maybe with stupid quizzes on my Twitter. And it's like, whoever, you know, answers this question can get a free digital and then DM them the code. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it, like you said, a book that I didn't like or whatever, you know, just like, well, I'm throwing this away, so I might as well give somebody the digital code.
Right.
And I've done that too. And hopefully, you know, they like it, got the book, and, you know, more sales makes everybody happy.
Uh-huh. So there's the good news.
What's the bad news then?
So this past weekend, Todd, Axel Alonso and what's the gentleman's name? David Gabriel, who is the head of marketing at Marvel. My apologies.
So.
He's the senior vice president of sales and marketing at Marvel.
Hi, muckety muck.
They let ICV2 sit in on their retailer summit. And they said a bunch of stuff, Todd.
It was all probably stuff nobody really cared about.
Well, they said that thing. They said things such as readers don't want a diversity or women in comics. Many of creators who left Marvel to go to Image are sad.
Boy.
$10 for a number one of a comic is a good thing. Unless your name is Star Wars, miniseries are the death knell of comics.
Can I have my name legally changed to Star Wars?
Yes. Not doing kind of introductory prices on first trades would reduce the sales of the already existing more expensive ones. And artists don't move books. Amongst many other things.
Making friends, boy.
That's just a few things.
The first one I'd like to start with is the people who left to go to Image are sad.
Right.
I just see, as we mentioned earlier in the news segment, I could just see Sad Kirkman sitting on his pile of money, or Brubaker, who's doing very well, just, hey, take that, parlay that. That fame you get at Marvel or DC and take it to Image. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, so his quote is, I doubt that's true with some high-selling books regarding people leaving for Image. I know it's not true for low-selling books. I've spoken with people, let's just say, wish they hadn't launched an Image book this year with the way money got sucked out of the market.
You know what? And the sad thing is, I bet that's kind of true, but like, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
There's grains of truth in all of that, but it's the way he's saying it. Now, whether the way he said it or it's the way it's being reported, fake news sometimes, Joe. I don't know if you know about that, but like, all joking aside, it's like, you know, like, people don't want diversity in comics.
Like, right.
No, but people don't want all the characters, like, you gave them all diversity all at once. And it wasn't that they didn't want diversity, or it was like, you could give us one character like that, or two characters like that, but you took away all the characters that we cared about. And that hurts you. Or if it's done badly, where it's, you know, just a terrible character with stories, it doesn't have, just tell good stories. All of these problems can be solved at Marvel with our credo, just tell me good stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I'm all over the place.
No, well, no, listen, this is actually something that we've talked about at our shop with our local retailer.
Mm-hmm.
How he has told us that there are people who come into the shop and they'll pick up a Captain America book or an Iron Man book or, you know, a Thor book. And just be like, this isn't the Thor I know. This isn't the Iron. This isn't Tony Stark. This isn't Steve Rogers. I don't want this book.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes you can sell people on this and say, listen, no, you know, Thor is a continuation. It's been a 4 or 5 year ongoing story. Same thing with Cap, and looks, you know, look, you know, well, Cap's a little bit of a bad example. But at least Iron Man is, you know, Tony Stark is still kind of sort of in the book. It's the continuation of a longer story, but it's not going to have that same shelf appeal that if it was the guy that I kind of sort of looks like the guy that I recognize from the movie that I like on the cover of my book.
I totally know what you're saying. It's brand recognition, and then when you have books like two of them, like Sam Wilson Captain America against Steve Rogers Captain America, or, you know, if they double up on anything else, it's going to be the true older character, like the longest running one, is always going to, unless there's a super creative team on it or it's really, really great, it's always going to beat the other title, in my opinion. Right. So that's the thing. And the other one that that he threw out, and I'm dance around delicately, but when he says like artists don't move the meter, that's a lie. But I believe that writers are slightly more important to a comic than artists, but I guess that's because it is to me, if that makes any sense.
Well, okay. Yes and no. At the end of the day, for me and you, I think we've discussed, we're more writer-focused than anything else.
Right. I just want to say one thing. Me, it's the perfect blend is 50-50, a great writer and a great artist. But between the two, I will almost never buy a comic for great art with a bad story, but I will buy a great story with bad art more often.
Mm-hmm.
Then now go ahead. This is the best way I wanted to explain.
Okay. Now, and a lot of this had stemmed from a lot of the more recent Marvel announcements of new books. It would be like, hey, here's a new book by this writer, and no mention of who the artist is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people out there who are very, you know, very much about an artist, because maybe they themselves are artists. And this is the... I want to read this quote.
Okay,
so there are fewer artists that impact sales than there are writers. Artists are harder to promote. It's harder to pop artists these days. There's no apparatus out there. There's no Wizard magazine out there to tell you who the top 10 artists were. We don't have that anymore. We can hype artists all we want, but I don't know if we know how many artists, besides maybe McNiven and Coypel, absolutely move the needle on anything they've drawn. Now, Wizard has been out of circulation for, what, 10 years now?
I'm unaware, but probably close to that.
Okay. There was a period of time about 4 or 5 years ago where Marvel was real hot on pushing their artists. Remember the Young Guns specials?
Well, they always had those, yeah. The Marvel was always big about pushing their young artists.
Well, okay, and I'll say this, just to kind of flip the script on something like that, is Eric Larson said that essentially Marvel has quoted artists since we all left in 1992.
Hmm. Do you think that's correct?
He said it in a much flowery, longer, multi-tweet way than I just said. The reason we left and formed Image Comics was because Marvel's plan was to minimize the importance of the artist and shuffle the focus back to their creations and not us.
He may be close. Because after that, there was a bad taste in Marvel's mouth about like those artists who left. So I'm wondering if they didn't want to give him a big head shortly after that.
Right.
Like anybody who was up and coming, and they didn't want to shoot themselves in the foot again. But they probably pushed artists since then, but not the way maybe that they used to. And I'm going to tell you something from being a sketch guy at cons.
Right.
Boy, do those artists get mad about certain things with that. Like, I remember when on trade paperbacks and hardcovers, writers' names were getting bigger and artists' name were getting smaller. Oh, the grumblings I heard in Artist Alley over that. Won't name any names, but wow. There was a few people going off. Like, and this was a few years ago when like this stuff had permeated once before with like credits and stuff like that. And I was walking around like, ooh. And artists felt like second-class citizens for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting.
Now, and see, the thing is, you know, obviously we've mentioned this before. I'm more of a writer guy. I'm more loyal to a writer than anything else, but a good artist will definitely get me to check something out that I didn't check out before. And when you say it's tough to market artists, now, unfortunately, these are artists that kind of already have some sort of name and brand recognition, and they said only, like, outside of McNiven and Copiel, move the needle. Now, granted, some of these artists are at DC or at Image or what have you, but Amanda moves the needle.
Yes.
In a big way. Alex Ross moves the needle in a big way.
Alex Ross is different, though.
Okay.
And he does, but Alex Ross is somebody who... Okay, I just saying, like, Amanda Conner will do a monthly comic.
Right.
Alex Ross will get $1 billion for doing the Oscar poster.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference. Do you know what I mean?
But
like,
I'll say this. I'm sure if Marvel was to promote a book, and they did in the past, you know, we're talking in the 90s, that Marvel's was more that it was Alex Ross doing this. Kind of not so much Kurt Busiek. It was they were pushing Alex Ross to the forefront that he was doing this full book.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of turned out that, hey, this Kurt Busiek's a pretty good writer. We kind of already knew this, but, like, he's on this big project that a lot of people are reading because it had Alex Ross art.
I agree. But do you think it has anything to do with the fact that a lot of artists, like, back in the day, the art was more simplified and they could hit monthly deadlines like nobody's business? And now it's more to push an artist, you have to push him on an arc because he might... There have been few... I would have to go over it. I don't know. In my mind, at least, there have been fewer artists that have been... Like, think of the great... Like Aja and who was on Hawkeye off the top of my head. I'm getting mixed up. Was it Aja? And
yes.
Who was the writer?
Matt Fraction.
Action. So you have, like, that book, and then you have Mark Waid and who was on Daredevil?
Chris Somney.
Like, you don't have, like, try to think of the books that where you were like, yes, these are the artists that are on there a long time and they have a name. Because to me it seems the trouble is you have an artist on a book for a 5-issue run and then they're gone. Do you know what I mean? Like, doesn't seem... You have to have that staying power to push an artist. Because by the time you're pushing the book, their run is over.
But, okay, then that's up to you, the publisher, you, the editor, to say, hey, we're going to get behind you as an artist on this book. Your name is going to be just as big, if not bigger than, the writer on this book. But do you need 3 months? Do you need 4 months? Do you need 5 months? When can we start soliciting this so that all 6 or 12 or whatever issues are all going to be your art?
But
you need to tell the artist, you know, in this instance that you're presenting, say to the artist ahead of time, we're going to give you the full push on this, but you need to give us books on time.
That's great and all, but the beast doesn't allow that.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't. That's why DC started those Earth One books with artists who don't meet a monthly deadline.
Right.
Because you could give them all the time in the world, but then, you know, the upper-ups or whoever changes stuff, it's these artists have to go back and redraw things because things change in the course of 8 months. It's the turnaround on these books is ridiculous. So you're like, oh, well, we're drawing Luke Cage as, you know, this whatever, like, character in this book. By the time this book comes out, he's going to be dead for 3 months.
But,
and I'm not saying that's a, like, you know, that's a defendable thing, but that's the way these books are. They want them so they can change them, and artists don't want to go back and redraw things.
Well, okay, but there's ways that you can get around that. One, if you're creative. Two, if you're a good editor. And three, you know, very easily. You know, we're going to talk about it here shortly, but Black Widow number 12 just came out this past week. Right at the beginning of the issue, it says, the events of this series take place before those of Civil War II. Civil War II, which wrapped up 5 months ago?
I agree. But you know that people must hate these asterisks because they disappeared. Do you know what I'm trying to say? If the people in charge like them, they don't like them because of the trade paperbacks, which makes no sense to me.
Right.
Because by then the trades are made come out after stuff, so things are changed. But they're like, oh, then you read this trade and it's like, oh, these take place after the events of this book, which have no bearing on the thing. I don't know. You could take them out and post. You know, I've seen that them do that in trades.
And I've even seen them add them after the fact.
Right. It's a very weird business from the things that I've heard, you know, through my informants, Joe.
Oh, but, man.
You know
how you feel about rumor and innuendo here on the show.
We love it. But do you know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. It's above my pay grade to fix these problems.
But I think there are ways. Another perfect example of this is Fiona Staples.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fiona Staples may not be an artist who can hit every deadline, but she works on high-profile books with respected creators, and therefore she has become, in her own right, a respected creator. On the more recent issues of Saga, I would say over the last, like, 12 to 18 issues of Saga, you know, her name is above Brian K. Vaughan's on the book.
Whether that's
a clause in her contract, whether that's Brian K. Vaughan's decision to do, whether it's Image's decision to do, the artist's name is above, you know, arguably the much more famous creator or writer on the book. Now, based on all of this, if tomorrow they announced a book that was written and drawn by Fiona Staples, who has never written a book before, I'm going to give that a try. You know why? I enjoy her work. Why do I enjoy her work? Because I see it in a book that I like.
I totally agree. And then I would make my judgment call on the product
right. That
was before me when it came out.
But that's one of those things where, you know, we're going to mention this before, Scotty Young. And that's my taste. I like Scotty Young's art. I love the variant covers that he does. Excuse me. And when he announced his own book, the I Hate Fairyland book at Image, I would not have given that book a second look, but because I'm a fan of his covers as an artist, I don't know anything about him as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
When I got the first issue, I was surprised that he was the writer and the artist on the book. I thought he was just doing the art. I didn't even know who the writer was going to be because that's how much of a fan of his art I am.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's me. There's ways to publicize artists. And even if there's not a way to come out and say that there's not a way.
Oh, that was terrible.
Is the bad thing to do.
Oh, I totally agree that I honestly believe they didn't know the mics were hot that day.
Oh,
you know
boy.
What I mean? I don't know what they were thinking because they invited news people to the summit and it's like, oh, we're going to say this. They won't report it. Reporters don't report things.
Todd,
that's just crazy.
Todd, as you have learned, the mics are always hot.
Oh, that is true.
For better or for worse, the mics are always hot.
Yep. So my thing is, when it comes to artists, you know, there's a few books that I've bought just because of artists. But my advice to people is sometimes don't meet those artists in person. Might change your mind on buying their stuff in the future.
Or don't give them large sums of money.
Or as I call it, sweaty fists full of 20s.
Oh, my goodness. So we got a lot of news out of the way here, of course. So let's get into... Oof. What was that?
I was like, oof, my powder's wearing off.
All right. Did you take a moment?
No, I'm good.
So this is a busy weekend for conventions. There's a bunch. There's the Marble City Comic Con, where their website doesn't tell you very well where that is. The Undiscovered Realm Comic Con in White Plains, New York. The Grape City Comic Con in Lodi, California. But there's a bunch of big-tier, big-guest sort of conventions this weekend as well, Todd. There's the Super Mega Fest in Marlborough, Massachusetts.
Ooh, the cigarette capital world.
Oh, no, it's not. That's Winston-Salem.
Right.
With such luminary guests as Barbara Eden, Lonnie Anderson, Larry Storch, and Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, my goodness. I went to the Larry Storch School of Acting.
Oh, you
along with Kelly Bundy.
I was going to say, you and Kelly, huh?
Yep.
Oh, man. That's prime to go and interview all of those for the Gilbert Gottfried podcast.
I really hope that they have him light a cannon to knock down a tower out in front of the wherever they're having the show.
If I didn't have so much to edit, I would put in the F Troop theme right here.
That's right. Some of our timely F Troop humor.
Yes. So Wizard World is in St. Louis this weekend.
Hmm.
The newly crowned SmackDown World Heavyweight Champion Randy Orton will be there.
Oh, boy.
And as will Peter Tork, Mickey Dolenz, and playing the role of Mike Nesmith, Gene Simmons.
Oh, man. I bet you he has his own hat.
Well, his hair is a hat, I think, so.
Can't believe they couldn't get Mikey. Ugh.
We're not done, though, Todd.
Oh, we're not. I'm sorry. Right there is a murderer's row.
The Greater Philly Convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. has John Wesley Shipp.
With the helmet, hopefully.
Speaking of helmets, Fred Ottman's going to be there, who you would know better as Tugboat or Typhoon or the Shockmaster when his helmet fell off.
I know that. The Sparkly Stormtrooper.
That's right.
The Twilight Stormtrooper.
And some other guy, Colin Bakar? I don't know, whatever.
Oh, my God. Technicolor Dreamcoat Colin Baker.
He's Doctor number 7?
6.
Oh, that's so close.
Right, and his...
I had a 1 in 10 shot. Go ahead.
Oh, you had a 1 for 13 shot. But the best part is his Twitter name... is Sawbones Hex.
Oh, boy.
Because he couldn't get the 6th Doctor because somebody's sitting on that. So Sawbones is a doctor, and Hex is a 6-sided...
Oh, boy.
See what he did there?
Todd, do you want me to follow you on Twitter or figure out riddles? I'm doing one, not both.
Easy there, Batman.
Let me see. 6th Doctor. I want to see who has the Twitter account.
It's me. Shh.
It was me, Austin. It was me all along. Now, see, when you type in the 6th Doctor Twitter, it does come up with him.
It does?
No, like when you Bing it, it says, did you mean Sawbones Hex?
Of course, because where are they going to take you to Joe Palooka's Twitter? And I think that is actually who has
that account is suspended, Todd.
Oh, probably for attacking the other doctors.
I guess. But the Big E this weekend, Todd.
Big E?
No, not Big E. He's not allowed out in public. Or is that one of the other guys in the New Day?
Oh, that's right.
It is Steel City Comic Con in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Ooh.
Todd, do you like Star Wars?
I do like the Star Wars.
Well, Anthony Daniels and Billy Dee Williams are going to be there.
Oh, C-3PO and Lando Calrissian?
Yes. Todd, do you like Batman?
I do like the Batmans.
Well, Adam West and Burt Ward are going to be there.
Oh, I do like Adam West and Burt Ward.
Todd, do you like wrestling?
I do. No, I don't like the wrestlings.
Well, Booker T, Kurt Angle, and Sting are going to be there.
Well, I know I like two of those.
I don't know who you like. I'm gonna guess Kurt is one of them.
Kurt is one of them, and I like Booker T.
You don't like Kabuki Sting?
I don't like Kabuki Sting, and I don't like Surfer Sting. I don't like either of them. Unless they're doing the War Games, I don't like Sting.
All right, you might be seeing more Sting coming up on a future Gallifrey Birds. I'm just warning you.
That's okay. I'm only joking. I know how much you do like the Stings. I do like the guy from the Police.
Right.
But I only like him in the Police, not his solo stuff.
Oh, okay.
Just so we know.
Did you know that the Police were supposed to be a reggae band?
I can hear it occasionally. Mm.
That's what they claim.
Oh.
So all this and more is happening this weekend at all of these conventions, and all the links to all of those conventions are going to be in the show notes, as well as a link to the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com. Soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Whether you want to listen to this dumb show, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Prodigal Sons Podcast, Prime Defective, Fresher in Parlance, Profan Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, Paladins of Voltron, Aim Downsides Podcast, all of these shows have had new episodes within the last 7 days of me recording this. Some maybe even more than one. I don't know. Talkin' Gimmicks is still on hiatus. One of the co-hosts still has a ruptured eardrum. And he's also closing on a new house. I'm spoiling his his business here. But again, when you're doing those things, that's more important than doing a podcast about wrestling.
I don't know.
Someone else might just need to pick up the slack.
You know what? Maybe I'll guest star.
Oh, there you go.
I'll give my opinions on the wrestlings.
Well, you teased the world and said that you were going to come back to tweeting about live wrestling during WrestleMania, and then all of a sudden your illegal stream cut out on you.
That's right. I was getting it by carrier pigeon.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So, also included in the show notes will be a bunch of the digital sales and freebies that are available. The sales that are going on this week include DC Vertigo having a sale on their iZombie stuff, which I think the next season of that TV show is about to debut. IDW is having a sale on a bunch of their Disney and Disney-related titles. Image is having a sale that was tied into this past weekend's WonderCon, and this one is only good for like another day, so hop on that if there's a bunch of Image stuff in there that you want to get. And then Marvel is having a sale on Moon Knight trades, whether it be old stuff, kind of new stuff, more recent stuff, and then they've thrown in the most recent trades of other street-level heroes, your Daredevils, your Elektras, your Punishers, your Power Man and Iron Fists. It's though all of these people are involved in TV shows on Netflix. Is this a hint that Moon Knight is going to be on the Netflix TV show? I just started this rumor here today.
Well, hopefully when that wrestler with the GoFundMe wrestles on the moon, he doesn't get bit by it.
Oh, my goodness, I hope not. The same freebies that we had from last week are still there. They have not changed them. Marvel's usually good about changing them every 3 to 4 weeks. So we don't really have to go over that so much. So let's get into what we read from this past week, starting with Marvel's Black Widow number 12, written and drawn by the aforementioned Chris Samnee and Mark Waid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I will say, if you are a fan of Black Widow, and or you are a fan of some of the more recent continuity, Winter Soldier stuff, there's not a lot of other Marvel folks in here, like other than S.H.I.E.L.D. as a whole, Maria Hill, Winter Soldier, everything else is very neatly contained in Black Widow mythos.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the whole thing of her kind of trying to right the wrongs of everything that happened to her in the Red Room. There was another girl in there who has trained a bunch of other girls, younger girls at this point, you know, just like Natasha was way, way back then. And she has employed them to try to take Natasha down. And it's been a lot of espionage stuff. It's been a lot of cat and mouse stuff. And this has been the big climactic finale to these sort of things. And the only thing that's sad about it is it doesn't leave it so much on a cliffhanger. It does give it a definite ending. It's like, this is where this character goes, this is where this character goes, and this is where these characters go. I want to see more of what happens with where some of those characters are going.
Right.
And I have a feeling that we're probably not going to see that in any of the other books that are currently published, because I don't think Black Widow is appearing in anything else right now.
I can't think of anything.
Right. But this is a really good book. You know, I kind of postulated last week when we had mentioned it that I think one of the things that hurt this book is one that's kind of sort of not tied into everything else that's going on, but also the fact that it took, you know, it was a little delayed.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out. It's a 12 miniseries, and the first issue came out. And see, it wasn't that delayed. It looks like it was only delayed by like a month, because the first issue came out in March of 2016, and the last issue came out just this past week. But for some, it felt like a little bit more delayed between issues.
You know why?
Why?
Because DC's shipping books twice a month.
Yeah, that's true. That'll do it to you.
And it really will. All joking aside, you feel like, well, I got 17 issues of Batman, and you know, it's, oh, I've gotten 3 issues of Black Widow. It really throws me off with indie books that ship once a month and Marvel books. It makes my head spin sometimes. I wish now, I had like in triplicates or forms or something I could follow.
Now for me, where it mixes me up is the DC books that ship twice a month versus the DC books that don't ship twice a month.
That throws me off.
That messes me up too. Like, and they've been on schedule. You know, I know, Batman and Nightwing come out the same week, and I know Detective and Flash come out the same week, But then, like, now that there's books that are only shipping once a month, I get confused because I don't know what books they ship on.
Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my god.
I'm too old for Todd. I shouldn't be allowed to figure stuff out.
Yeah.
But all in all, if you enjoyed Mark Waid and Chris Samnee's work on Daredevil, it is a completely different book, Black Widow is. But if you enjoyed their work there, you'll enjoy work here. I'm sure because it's Samnee's art and it's really nice, they'll do some sort of fancy hardcover, maybe oversized collection for this. And there's a lot of gorgeous art in this, some nice double-page spreads. And yeah, it was a really good book. It's just I got confused on how long it took to come.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some of the stuff that we talked about. But one of the other big, I guess, fifth week events that DC did last week, Marvel, you know, launched all their X-Men and Inhuman stuff, but DC went a different route, and they had all those annuals or specials or whatever they were calling them, where the DC characters were crossing over with the Hanna-Barbera characters. Now, I only read one. Todd, I know you only got a chance to read one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, luckily, we have an expert on the line who read all of them, and that would be Craig from Puzzle Warriors 3. Craig, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You've asked to be on a show when this book was solicited. You made the public cry, said, I want to be on Longbox Heroes to talk about it, and that day has come.
I'm super excited because there is nothing better that could have happened than the Suicide Squad teaming up with the Banana Splits.
Well, if it's okay with you, let's talk about that one first, because I read that one. I have no entry point to the Banana Splits. Of all the Hanna-Barbera properties, like, that's the one that I have, like, I never saw the Banana Splits.
What? How is that possible?
Joe, I've
Where
never
seen... Where did you grow up?
I don't know what a Banana Split is, other than the Sunday. I've never seen an episode.
Oh, my God!
See, Craig, and again, I don't like to out people, but Craig, I think you might be a little bit older than me.
I mean, a little, sure. I don't know, 10 years maybe? I don't know. So, I have no idea how old you are, so...
I'm going to be 40 soon.
But, oh, I'm not that much older?
Right. But the Banana Split...
44.
Okay, so, see, and that's just the 4-year difference. Like, the Banana Splits was not in heavy rotation by the time, like, I was able to remember things on TV.
Oh.
The only reference other than this show that I was aware of the Banana Splits was, if you remember, from The Simpsons, they did the Who Shot Mr. Burns special.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed a bunch of celebrities on who they thought it was, and Chris Elliott of Get a Life fame postulated that it might have been the Banana Splits. And I didn't get the reference until the internet was a thing many years later.
The way I know who the Banana Splits are is from an old, like, stand-up comedian's routine where I forget who it was, but he was always like, if you ever watched Larry King, he's like, the first guest on the show is always the more famous the first guest, the more ludicrous, like, the second guest is. He's like, up next on Larry King, the first guest will be the ghost of Abraham Lincoln in the studio to answer questions. And then after that, the voice of Flegel from the Banana Splits. And I was like, okay, that's obscure because I don't know who the Banana Splits are.
Oh my gosh.
So I will say,
so you don't know any of the glory of the subplots of Banana Split Show. I mean, there was Danger Island,
so many apparently
the sour grapes girls, which were like this little singing group, and there's a joke in this issue about sour grapes.
What? So. Right over my head. Now I will say this. I didn't know they were a Hanna-Barbera property. I thought they were like an H.R. Puffin stuff thing.
Oh, no, that's Sid and Marty Croft. That's
right,
a whole
Sid
different
Marty
audience.
Croft, right.
That gets you your Hatsville, your Bugaloos.
Lidsville.
Yeah, Lidsville, that's what it was, yeah.
Right, but the thing is, like, those were on Lost in syndication when I was a little kid. Because I remember Foster, seeing those. Was. If they did a Sid and Marty Croft meets the DC Universe, that, you know, might hit a little bit more, you know, chords for me.
Yeah, I mean, Witchy Poo could show up and try and take Freddy Flute away, and, you know, Batman could come save them or something.
Oh, Aquaman with Sigmund the Sea Monster?
Oh, Aquaman with Sigmund the Sea Monster. That would be gold.
That would be money in the bank.
I would totally read that.
You get Commandy and Land of the Lost together.
Oh.
See, Craig, as a listener to the show, you always hear these great ideas happen. And since, and again, you know that these are not just off-the-cuff things, since you're reading from the same script that all of us are.
Yep.
It's a highly produced show, not just
all
a bunch.
I know is that the gold is, you know, right on the big first two-page spread. They even sing you some of the theme song right there on the page for you.
So there's no explanation as to why these anthropomorphic animals are existing in the DC universe. They just show up and
they're
get
on their
arrested.
Way to a gig. No, they're going to perform at a gig because they are a bubblegum pop band.
But there's no explanation as to, like, they just show up. They've never been in the DC universe before. They just show up.
That's correct.
They get arrested. While this is going on, the Suicide Squad are on a mission. Rick Flagg gets compromised. Amanda Waller is watching the screen. She sees these four weird characters, and she goes, "There's my new Suicide Squad, and you're off to the races." That said, while not a deep book that I had to do a lot of thinking about, this was a fun little story. Each character of the Banana Splits meets up with each character of the Suicide Squad was there. They have their little moments together. They become somewhat friendly, and then they inspire the new career of the Banana Splits at the end of the story. Spoilers, everyone.
Yeah, big twist at the end of the story. The Banana Splits take their career in a whole new way.
And then you have the Snagglepuss backup feature,
I missed something on what they were going for with this story.
Well, Snagglepuss is a southern dandy who's very right. much into plays, and they're asking him to name names of communists.
Yeah, this is the 1950s communist, you know, Congress hearings. And Snagglepuss is on trial. And he's being forced to name names from the Communist Party.
Oh my God.
That said, I enjoyed this book. It was a lot of fun.
I mean, if you're only going to read one thing featuring the Suicide Squad and the Banana Splits, you know, this year, this is the issue to get.
Who knows? Later this year, there might be more. But Todd, you read the Flintstones Booster Gold one, right?
Yes.
All right, so you guys have that one. I haven't read that one yet.
All right, see, now, I grew up a Marvel guy, so I honestly have to tell you, I had no idea who or what a Booster Gold was.
What?
I read this, and I went, it's some guy who can apparently time travel, but he's broke? Like, what kind of bad time traveler is he? But at least he fixes that part in the book. But, very strange.
There's a guy who got in trouble for, you know, throwing football games because he needed cash, and he's going to go back and be a hero. I always liked Booster Gold's origin. I always thought it was one of the smarter modern day origins to all the other ones, you know?
All right. So yeah, I didn't know that, you know, we're apparently in the far flung future where mankind has killed off every animal there is except for rats. So that's like the premier meat you can eat at the local diner. But Booster Gold is too poor to afford to buy his date some rat dinner. And then, for whatever reason, the Earth is suddenly attacked by aliens.
Which is a common DC plot. Is an alien invasion is like their second, every second storyline in the DC universe. It's like the moonshine on Dukes of Hazzard. It's like, all right, we're going to do gambling this episode. Then next week it's moonshine. Then the week after that it's, you know, something else. And then it's back to moonshine. Alien invasions are just par for the course in the DC universe.
All right. So Booster decides he's going to travel back in time and prevent this alien invasion from happening. And ends up in Bedrock, where one of this alien species is already there. Expounding upon the Bedrock people, how he can give them, you know, eternal goodness and happiness and long-lasting male enhancements.
Does that really happen?
Yes.
I have the trade for the first six issues of the Flintstones book, which, again, I'll be honest with you, it didn't set my world aflame when it was first pitched. But I have heard through so many people that it's really good.
A friend of mine is in every episode and, you know, every issue, and he says they're amazing.
makes me, I'm thinking about giving the Flintstones comic a try, but I didn't read any of the Flintstones before this.
But
so was this any good? Did you enjoy it? Not knowing Craig, at least not knowing who Booster Gold was.
It was okay. I wasn't blown away by it. You know, time travel happens. It gets all timey-wimey.
Ugh.
We get back to the future, and it's, you know, everything gets resolved. And through a lucky trans-time phone call to Batman's butler.
Alfred?
Yeah. Booster Gold gets $10 put into his bank account so that when he gets back to the year 2700-something, he's now a rich man and can afford to buy his girl, you know, meat. So,
rat meat.
No, well, not at the end.
Right.
Due to the timey-wimey changes in things, there's other things now to eat. I don't want to spoil too much.
So the second feature on this one I see is something to do with the Jetsons?
Yes. Yeah, so this is leading into the new Jetsons comic. It's kind of a sad story with a weird twist at the end. Judy Jetson is off to visit her grandmother in what, you know, originally appears to be like an old folks home. But it turns out that it is a place where old people can go to, pass on. And then there is a big twist at the end. After grandma shucks loose the mortal coil.
Oh man.
Very upbeat stories in this one.
But it's the ending I did not see coming, and will make for an interesting run of the Jetsons when it's here in a couple months.
So yeah, I'll be very intrigued to see which ones of these get made into ongoing series or mini series or one shots or like how they're going to do this going forward. You know.
I'm still waiting for my Snidely Whiplash comic to follow up on my Wacky Raceland.
They pitched it. I remember they talked about it. I'm surprised it wasn't part of one of these things.
Yeah, because Wacky Raceland was left wide open at the end, and I had no resolution. It left me unsatisfied.
Now, Craig, you said you read the other ones.
I did.
And just to kind of go over these here for the listeners at home, Adam Strange and the Future Quest. What else did we have here as I'm looking at the list? Green Lantern Space Ghost.
Right.
And was there one more? Or no, that was it. That was it.
No, there was four of them.
So which one was your favorite? Which was the best? Which had the best second feature?
Well, Banana Splits and Suicide Squad is my favorite by far. It's a really fun read. The best sub-feature is the Top Cat feature from the Future Quest Adam Strange crossover. They take Top Cat in a turn that is completely unexpected.
Written by Dan DiDio. I just want to throw that out there.
Not the Top Cat you grew up on. Assuming, you know, you grew up on Top Cat.
As we always say on the show with Dan DiDio, by the writer who got the first title in the New 52 cancel.
And the description for Top Cat says, breaking out of prison is challenging enough for a cat, but sometimes it means stumbling through a cosmic portal to Earth and right into the hands of Batman.
That is all correct. I mean, you get Batman, you get Catwoman, you get Top Cat, you know, you get Benny in the gang, and it definitely takes Top Cat in a light you've never seen him. You know, being that he was, you know, a criminal mastermind. You know, he's just a little darker in the Batman universe.
Well, listen, people were saying they missed the darker aspects of the DC universe. You've got it. It's just in Top Cat.
It did at the end. It did make me want to, when I go down to my local comic shop next week, to have them add Top Cat to my pull list for the future. Because I got to see where this story goes.
Did you? If I had told myself a few years ago, hey, Todd, you know, there's going to be a new grim and gritty comic book series at DC. Oh, Top really? Cat. Who? Yeah, who's the character? Top Cat? No.
So I highly recommend the Top Cat sub-feature. Again, wasn't really always an DC guy. Adam Strange? I had no idea who this was.
could you not know who Adam Strange is? He's like the Banana Splits of DC Comics.
I looked him up and they're like, I don't know, he's some astronaut or something. And I went, oh, okay, he's some astronaut or something.
Some astronaut or something.
Now, being that he was in Future Quest, which I think, personally, might be the greatest property DC has going right now for me. Future Quest is tremendous. It's a great book.
I unfortunately gave up on it only because like it was starting to get like later and later.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of kept falling to the bottom of my pile on a monthly or bi-monthly basis whenever it was coming out.
So in full disclosure, up until like a year ago, I had given up comics for 25 years.
And I remember, that's right, Future Quest is the thing that brought you back in.
Yeah, Future Quest is what got me back in, because I'm like, oh my god, I love Johnny Quest. And now it's got all these other Hanna-Barbera properties in it. And then I got that, which got me into, you know, I got Wacky Raceland, I got Future Quest. So then I started getting other things, and then, you know, I got into, so I'm also getting Lucifer, I'm also getting, the new Hellblazers.
Right.
I'm a big fan of that book. I think it's done very well. And then over on the Marvel side, I finished up Unworthy Thor, which is one of the best things I've read in years. And, Infamous Iron Man is tremendous right now.
So I have two questions. Did you ever read Lucifer before, like the old Vertigo run that was before this, or?
No, I just started with the number one that came out after, you know, the latest Rebirth.
Right. And then another just weird question I have, because I'm interested as someone who hasn't read comics in 25 years and you're getting back into it. Have you heard about the Warner Brothers cartoon DC crossovers that are coming up? The one shots?
You guys talked about them last week?
A couple weeks ago, yeah.
Yes. Do you have any interest in any of those?
Can you remind me which one's coming?
There's like Batman Elmer Fudd.
Mm-hmm.
There's Jonah Hex, Yosemite Sam. I'm trying to remember. Martian Manhunter, Marvin the Martian.
Bugs Bunny, Legion of Superheroes.
Okay. And I'm trying
Wonder
to
Woman, Tasmanian Devil.
Oh, right. That
Lobo and the Roadrunner.
Oh, boy.
And I think that's it. I think there's like six this time as opposed to four.
I think Wonder Woman is probably going to be my favorite of those. Because I'm sure I would have no hope that in my dreams, Marvin would finally succeed in something and would eliminate Jean from the universe for all eternity. Because, boy, that would make me happy.
Is Jean anywhere now in DC Rebirth?
You know what? I don't know. I haven't seen him anywhere. Maybe he might be in one of those in the regular Justice League book. Yeah, I think he's back in the main Justice League book.
Oh,
not the America one with Lobo and stuff like that. The regular one.
I mean, here's a character who could do everything better than everyone else. I just couldn't stand him.
Oh, I love Martian.
But a match could defeat him.
Right. You can set him on fire, but besides that, you know, he's stronger than Superman. He's faster than Flash. He can fit through things. You can't hurt him. He's into everything. And, you know, he's got telepathic powers or something. I don't know. He could, whatever. He can raise people from the dead. Yeah, I mean, he can do whatever he wants.
But he's also in Oreos Anonymous.
Chacos. 12... We don't have the rights to Oreos.
That's right. Chacos Anonymous. It's a 12-step plan.
Hydrox Anonymous.
Yeah.
No, Hydrox is a little too rich for our blood as well.
Mm.
That's right.
But yes. Anyway, going back. So Adam Strange Future Quest. It's an okay story. It's not super exciting. The winner there you want is Top Cat. And then the last issue is Green Lantern with Space Ghost. So Green Lantern and Space Ghost both respond to an interstellar distress call. They show up. Originally, they each think that they're being summoned to protect the planet from the other. So they squabble a little bit and then realize that they are on the same side and help out said planet in distress. And then I have a question for this because I know you guys are big into the Green Lantern.
Yes. Right?
When did Green Lantern suddenly get like a sentient ring that talks to him and tells him when it's running out of power?
He kind of always had that.
Boy, I never remember that as a kid.
Always tell him when, like, what power level he was at. And it wasn't like it was a sass talking ring or something, but
yeah, like he's having conversations with it, and it's giving him sass, and I'm like, I don't understand.
Well, I don't know about Seth, but like it would always be like he would ask it a question and it would like scan the area, tell me this, tell me that, you know?
Right. It was hooked up to the main power battery and it would give him information. It'd be like, what's the local species, stuff like that. But it would just give him like a computer information. It wasn't like a jive talking ring or anything.
Yeah,
like
now
that.
It's probably called Snarky. And here's a big question in the Green Lantern universe. Why doesn't he carry the lantern with him? So he can just charge up anytime he wants?
Back in the day, he kept it in a pocket universe, and it would just, so he didn't have to carry it. It would be like, oh, I need to charge my ring. He'd reach in, like, to nothing. Hard to explain. His hand would disappear, and it would be like, oh, I got my lantern. Now, I don't know, like, the modern age, if they changed that much, because they never really, you know, did that, so... But I think it's to make it so, like, it's like, oh, my ring is running down. I just don't have the ability to charge it. It's like the ticking time bomb builds suspense kind of a thing.
Yeah, because they kept making it a big point of, you know, what the power levels were. And then at one point, you know, the weapons get mixed up and Space Ghost has the power ring and Green Lantern has Space Ghost's power bands. And, you know, the ghost just starts burning through power like there's no tomorrow, you know, and... Green Lantern gets very concerned that he might not be able to make it home, you know, because he's running out of juice.
I guess he doesn't have that power battery with him the way I described.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. Why doesn't he always have the lantern with him? It's like hanging from a belt loop. What's wrong with you?
Very heavy.
I think once you got the power of the ring, can't it just make the lantern lighter and you can just keep recharging all the time?
I guess. I don't know.
The lantern only needs recharged like once a millennia or something, right?
I don't think the lantern ever needs to be recharged.
I thought there was one storyline where he had to take the lantern back to whatever the name of Mystery Planet X is, where all the Green Lanterns are from, and charge it up at the one original super battery.
There might have been a storyline. I don't remember every GL story that's ever been told. But that happens
like once every 10,000 years or 1,000 years or some such. The lantern itself needs charged back up.
Vaguely remember that.
Hmm. The double feature in that one, again, here's my ignorance. I have no idea what a rough or ready is, but it was rough and ready.
That's another one I was never big on or
now,
knew of.
Rough and ready, is that the DC property or is that the Hanna-Barbera property?
I'm assuming it's a Hanna-Barbera property.
Right, because all the backup names were Hanna-Barbera properties.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea who Rough and Ready are, neither.
Yeah, I suppose we can use the interwebs here.
Come on, Internet, tell me something.
Are you binging it?
I am, because, you know, I need to get those rewards.
Oh, boy. Yep, you would know, I guess, well, I don't know which one is Rough and which one is Ready, but... again, this one was from the 50s, so that one's way before my time. It only ran from 1957 to 1960, so again, not one of the top properties like a Quick Draw McGraw or something.
Ah, see, okay, looking at episodes or issues from 1960, those characters I recognize by the way they're drawn. They look nothing like that in this new format.
But you see the play on words. It's rough and ready. I think like red and bark, right? Isn't that what the play on words? No guess.
Well, the original one is rough and the word and ready. But the new one is rough and ready. You know, like Guns N' Roses.
Well, you got to make it cool and hip for the modern kids.
Or, you know, Ren and Stimpy.
True.
For us older folks. Who grew up on, you know, John, what's his name? John Kay's stuff.
John Chris Felucci.
Yes.
Noted crazy person, allegedly.
I don't care. He wrote some amazing episodes of Reds.
Absolutely.
Space Madness is one of the greatest things you'll ever see.
I'm more of a fan club episode.
my beloved ice cream bar. How I love to lick your creamy center.
There's stuff from Space Madness that I say to my son on an almost daily basis. And he has no idea what I'm talking about.
I use, he's as mortal as you or I all the time.
So before we derail the show too much, Craig, before we let you go, and you are open to come onto the show anytime that another one of these Hanna-Barbera property things happen, when your Dick Dastardly and Muttley book finally comes out.
Yep, I'm good. Or the Top Cat issue, I'll be back for Top Cat.
All right. You'll be penciled in on the calendar. You know, we get the information of these solicitations sometimes leak a little bit early. You know, one of these conventions might let something slip, but we'll give you the Iggy. We'll let you know. Is there anything you would like to plug before we let you go?
I don't know. I've got this other show. You might want to check it out. If you play Marvel Puzzle Quest, come on over to Puzzle Warriors 3 and check out our podcast. It's a good time. If you like bad singing and lots of derailments, that is the show for you.
As much as I love the singing and as much as I love the derailment, my favorite thing on the show is Ray's reaction to you and Ian derailing the show. Because he really wants the show to go off without a hitch, and it's been 84 episodes as of this recording, and none of them have gone off without a hitch because there's always some sort of side conversation that happens.
Well, the best part is that Ray has to edit all the episodes.
Right, so you guys don't care.
The more that I derail it, that means the more work for him the next day.
I hate editing this show. It's so you know, tiresome.
We do our show live Wednesday nights. Check us out on YouTube. If you're into Puzzle Quest and you join our Discord server, we post the live feed there every week. So we do the show live on Wednesdays, which is kind of a raw, unedited, but still family-friendly format. And then the next day, Ray edits all the audio and tries to, you know, clean it up some for pauses and things that make no sense, and just to make it easier to hear. But it's been a good time. It's hard to believe that we're, you know, a year and a half into it.
And it's one of my favorite shows to listen to because I love me some Marvel Puzzle Quest.
Yeah, who doesn't? If only you could get Todd into this, you know, that'd be gold.
Did you see there were people speculating that there's a Star Wars Puzzle Quest that's coming out?
What if they cross over?
No. Every time something happens in Marvel Puzzle Quest, people complain. And, like, there's a WWE Puzzle Quest that's called, like, WWE Champions or whatever. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, well, this could be the thing that gets people to not play Marvel Puzzle Quest. No, that wasn't it. Now Star Wars is coming out, and everyone's like, well, maybe this will be the thing that gets people not to play. We'll see.
Oh, one thing, though, I do want to point out, everyone needs the campaign for two things. One, we need a new character in Puzzle Quest. And two, she needs her own comic book. So we need Dazzler. Everyone, get on the Dazzler train.
Lady Gaga.
She needs her own book. She needs to be a featured character, a 5-star character in Puzzle Quest. This needs to happen.
I only have one Puzzle Quest question.
All right.
When are we going to get Colossus or Nightcrawler?
We have Colossus.
Oh, when are we going to get Nightcrawler then?
Nightcrawler will be sometime 1 year after all of the movie rights revert back to Disney.
Okay, just checking. I was told to always ask about Nightcrawler.
Gambit and Rogue.
It's always Nightcrawler, Gambit, and Rogue is what everybody wants because they are all fools. The correct answer is Dazzler and then Namor are the two that really need to get into this game.
My favorite cosplay that I do is Namor. The original Namor, not that armored vest stuff. No, just me, a green Speedo, and wings on my ankles.
World War II Namor.
That's right, with the Widow's Peak.
Again, Namor, Marvel's first mutant,
really
should be represented in their game.
Again, which is why he'll never be in the game.
But I forget who owns his movie rights.
Oh,
I don't know if he got sold off with Fantastic Four or not.
No, he's like at some other studio. It's like he's not at the Fantastic Four studio. He's not at the X-Men studio. He's not at Marvel. He's somewhere else.
I thought he was at Universal.
Yeah, like someone weird owns rights.
Right, because Fox has Fantastic... Yes, it's Universal. Because Fox has Fantastic Four and FF.
Right.
Sony had Spider-Man, and Universal had Namor. but I think it went back because nothing happened.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because yes. There's never been a Namor movie ever.
Then they need to really get me some Namor.
These are things that are never going to happen. Namor is never going to have his own book. He's never going to be in Puzzle Quest. And sadly,
Namor have his own book again? He's a member of the Illuminati. He can make things happen.
He was, spoilers, he was killed in Squadron Supreme, but then he got better.
Yeah, they brought him back. He's fine.
But he's, like, he's in, like, Squadron Supreme as, like, the ninth guy down. Hyperion gets billed over him. Come on.
No, the Prince of Atlantis will rise again, and Namor will totally get what's due him. He's Namor. Come on. I mean, it's just a crime that he doesn't have his own book. Again, you know, Astro Dazzler.
After Dazzler. What if they do Namor Dazzler team up?
Oh, man, if those two characters could get married, that would be, like, the greatest thing ever. Like I said, one of the best things that happened in the, you know, in the sadness was the X-Men versus Inhumans comic, which is drug on way too long, is that Black Bolt, you know, they're like, oh, we need to take down Black Bolt. And the answer is simple. We've got Dazzler. She shows up. Black Bolt says, huh, I'm going to scream at you and kill you instantly. Nope. I'm going to take all your sound and just blast you in the face. Bam. End of Black Bolt.
So by that logic, ipso facto, she's the first six-star character in Marvel Puzzle Quest.
Right, because she's the stuff. I mean, you know, she's Dazzler. How many characters can pull off their own rock concert being both the musical talent and the special effects director?
You got me there. That's quite the superpower that'll save the day.
And nowadays, she's a roller derby queen. She's got that going for her, too. She owns a roller derby rink. And a roller derby team. In the comics, now when she actually makes her vague appearances.
Well, maybe with all this X-Men stuff coming back, maybe she'll get a resurgence. Who knows?
Is A-Force still going on? Is that done?
That's been done for a while.
Okay, because she was in there.
Right.
Which gave me a glimmer of hope that, you know, she was on the rebound. But, and because I tweeted out, I think you saw my Dazzler Legend figurine came in.
Right.
You know, because, you know, at least Marvel hasn't completely forgotten about her because they put her out as a brand new action figure.
And I was going to say, you spent $25 to get Dazzler and a leg.
Oh, I wish it was $25.
Oh, got raked over the coals for that one, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, on Amazon Prime, you can't be getting Dazzler for, you know, chump change. You gotta shell out for Dazzler. And one arm of Warlock.
Oh, it was an arm. I thought it was a leg that you got.
No, let me try and look at the thumb situation here. It appears to be his left arm.
Did you open the Dazzler or you keep it in
your
box?
Oh, no. I can't open the Dazzler. I'm never going to put this Warlock together. Because then I would be forced to buy, like, Sunfire. Or Polaris. And who wants them? Or Shatterstar. Come on. Shatterstar gets his own figure.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Craig, thank you very much for being on the show. I appreciate you coming on here and bringing
you got lots
your
of editing
derailment
to do ahead
train
of you.
To us.
Lots of editing in your future, but I really appreciate you.
No editing. It's all staying in because it's all been good stuff. All right, we got to finish up our show. We got to talk about Have Issues. We got to talk about what's coming out next week. We got to talk about all the TV shows, all the crazy things that happened in the finale of Walking Dead that we've watched. Oh, my goodness. So, Craig, again, thank you very much for joining us here, and you'll be back the next time these Hanna-Barbera things happen again at the DC Universe. All right, and thanks, Craig, for joining us. I know you got a lot of bubble popping to take care of. Heads are rolling over the Old Man Logan fiasco, but that's for another podcast, which is yours. But we had so much fun here with Craig. I think we're going to have Craig on After Dark next week.
Wow.
Hopefully he can fit it into his busy schedule. He's more of a jet than you or I.
Popular man, popular man.
In demand, of course. So that's what we've read from this past week. Let's get into what we're most looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you get them shipped to your home, however it is that you get your books, be prepared, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming so that you have enough money and a wheelbarrow to bring all those home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two things going on. Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week, as well as keeping an ongoing tally of how many books we have purchased from every publisher so we can look at the tally at the end of the year. I'm closing it a little bit because I think I had a little bit of a week than you did.
Slightly, yes.
But the real number is us attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. I am gaining ground on Todd with 5 correct guesses, and he has 7 correct guesses. So you started the show, so you are first, my good man.
Looking over your list, and this is one of those weird weeks where I don't know. Is it Captain Kidd number 5?
It is not.
Oh.
I'm not going to tell you what my most looking forward book is, because I think you and I have the same one, because I think the one that you're most looking forward to coming out this week is Batman number 20.
It is Batman number
Boom. 20. Boom!
The end of the Bane, Iron Bane storyline.
Yep, mine is Batman number 20 as well. It would have been Rock Candy Mountain, legitimately one of the books that I was most looking forward to coming out, but we did talk about it last week. You can listen to last week's episode to hear us gush over that new Kyle Starks book from Image, and again, it wouldn't be fair since we've already talked about it to be on the list of, you know, eligible contenders.
Yes, I agree.
So, gaining more ground, Todd!
Uh-oh.
I'm gaining on ya!
You know what? I'm just gonna have to assault and shut you down. That's from here on out.
That is one thing I'll give you. I am offensive.
You are, boy.
So, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out everything else that we have over there as well, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark, past pull-outs, past Todd and Joe Have Issues. Everything else that we've done is there at longboxheroes.com for your perusing pleasure. Again, unfortunately, things are going a little long. That's why we don't have a preview review book this week. But I promise we'll bring it back for next week.
Oh, goody.
One of the other things that you can do while you're over at longboxheroes.com is click on our little tab there that says Store, where you can purchase t-shirts or stickers with our fancy logo on it by our good friend Tom Derenick. Or if you don't want a sticker, you don't need a poster, you can click on that Amazon banner. Easter's coming up, everyone. You need plastic eggs. You need that terrible grass that gets everywhere. You need faux bunny ears to wear. Purchase them through our Amazon.
Maybe a little tail?
Right, a little tail to put. You can just get a piece of cotton, but you could buy a bag of cotton balls through Amazon, and we get a little bit of a kickback. Some of the things that were purchased through the Amazon click-through this past week, Tom, is a 6-quart... 7-in-1 multifunctional pressure cooker.
Ooh.
And I love reading the full titles of some of these things, because it's just more confusing than anything else. I'm not going to include the serial number, but someone purchased a case of 12 GlassFoss Industries Z-Line Series pleated filters.
Mm. I'm not big into pleats.
Right. Someone also purchased a 30mm lens for a Canon camera. So, thank you to everyone who purchased these and any other purchases that you made through our Amazon crew. It makes us happy. And whenever you see Todd tweet out ka-ching or cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
Cha-ching. That's when you know the Amazon gods are paying us off.
Yes.
We're not going to beat you over the head with doing bounties or signing up for Amazon Prime or Amazon Music. If you know the things that Amazon has to offer and you want to partake in them, do it through our link. It does something for us. I don't know exactly what it is. We're just happy that you're taking that one extra click to make your purchases and give us a little something.
That's right. This is the ultimate shill ride right here.
Right. No, that's this Friday.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
So, before we get into TV talk, of course, we have the latest installment of Todd and Joe Have Issues, as we are going to discuss Marvel 2-in-1 Annual Number 7. And this is written by Jim... No, not written by Jim Shooter.
Tom DeFalco.
Tom DeFalco. My apologies. Editor was Jim Shooter. And this was one of the... This was the book that you picked. And let me just pull this up here. Ron Wilson was the artist on this.
Yes, one of my favorite thing artists of all time.
Before you get into this, and I throw my peanut gallery comments in, being this is the first time that I read this, I love the way that he draws an open mouth thing.
Yes, he does.
Yes. I don't know what about it, but there's just something so enjoyable about the way he does it. When the thing has his mouth open, it just looks so funny.
It does. He looks like he's always aghast.
Yes.
He's like, "What's going on? I'm the thing, and things are strange around here." But
so tell everyone what this book is about, Todd.
Basically, this book is about. It starts out with the thing posing for his girlfriend Alicia Masters at the time. She's doing. She's doing a sculpture of stuff, and a, what would you call him, like a manager kind of guy shows up, and he basically takes Thing away because he's one of the strongest people on the planet, and you slowly find out that he's grabbing all the strong people in the Marvel Universe on planet Earth to fight Champion, who's one of the elders of the universe. I'm trying to think of what they call it, because I get so confused on all the cosmic people in the Marvel Universe. But basically, Champion has decided that he's been going from planet to planet looking for someone worthy enough to fight him, and nobody has been even given him one round, and he comes to Earth and gets people like Thor, Sasquatch, Hulk, Doc Samson, Colossus, did I say Thor? Namor, and Wonder Man, and he gets them all together to have this boxing match to see if anybody can give him a glorious fight, which he's looking for. And through the people, you know, they go through the people, none of them can give Champion the fight that he wants, or through a series of events they qualified, when it's easier to do that way because there are people more powerful than Thing. But in the end, it comes down to the Thing versus Champion, and the motto that Thing will just never quit is basically what it comes down to this. And Thing, even though he gets his rocky hide handed to him, he refuses to give up, and Champion in the end ultimately respects that.
It's a scene out of Rocky I where Rocky gets more reaction from getting up from the 10 count than any punch he throws.
Right.
So you say the 8 different people that he picks. Now, obviously, they're all on the cover. Mm-hmm. So, having never read this, I didn't know what the premise was. This was, I'm just like, oh, the thing boxes a guy, you know?
Right.
So everything about this book is a delight. From like the throwback art that I love, the fact on the cover there's the blurb that says twice as many pages, twice as many thrills.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
While this is a good, nice, one and done, self-contained story, I would be remiss to mention that I do feel as though this story may have been padded just a bit.
Well, it was edges, that's why.
Right. No. So, just as an, like, I'll just say, I liked it. I liked it a lot. It was fine. It was a good book. I enjoyed it. It's the thing, doing things. But there's, like, a whole little subplot there with the Vision and Wanda.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just, like, the guy shows up. It's like, oh, I was going to take you, Vision, but you're not a real man. And then that's it, you know?
Right, but the thing that I like about that is it sets up that there are rules that can get you disqualified. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's like, because Vision is one of the strongest people on the planet, and he's like, nope, you don't get to go. So I like that. I don't know.
Secondly, I like Doc Samson's old, terrible costume.
Oh, the Jay Garrick t-shirt?
He's a big fan.
Mm-hmm. He's a Golden Age Flash mark.
So he takes all these people and he's like, oh, you have to train them. You have to train, right? Mm-hmm. So while they're training, we get the thing of, oh, the Fantastic Four are sad. Let's go find Thing. Then we get the X-Men. It's like, oh, Colossus is sad. Or Colossus is gone. We're sad. Let's go find him. Now, this is the other thing. Because Colossus is such, like, a big dude, you forget that he's supposed to be, like, younger.
Yeah, he's a teenager.
Right, you forget that. And by you, I mean me. Right. So, as we continue through the training, like, Doc Samson is, like, immediately eliminated. It's just like, he takes one shot from one of the training robots, and it's like, yep, I'm done. He gets knocked down, that's it. I'm like, we could have just done without this.
No, I like that. They showed that Doc Samson's not a, he's just a brawler. He's not a, scientific, he's not the sweet science of boxing.
So the Namor, on the other hand, it's like, nah, I don't want to train. Okay, you go back. It's like, you have to follow these rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's so ridiculous to me. I don't know why. Oh, so where I was going with this is I was worried that we were going to get, like, all these different scenes. It's like, oh, the X, like, Colossus is missing, so we're going to get, like, 3 or 4 pages of the X-Men looking for him. The Thing is missing. We're going to get 3 or 4 pages of Fantastic Four looking for him. Sasquatch is missing. We're going to get 3 or 4 pages of Alpha Flight looking for him. You know, we're just going to get, like, 3 or 4 pages of everyone who's missing looking for whoever the guy who's missing is, right? So then the first fight is Thor, and it's like, well, you're going to dress as a boxer, but you're still going to have your helmet and your hammer on. We're going to let you fight for a little bit, and then all of a sudden I'm just going to decide that you're using an object that's illegal.
No, he threw it. That's what was illegal.
Okay.
He was fine with it at his side, but as soon as he threw it,
right,
he was like, You're disqualified for using your weapon illegally.
You can bring the weapon in the ring, but you can't use it.
Right. No, you can't throw it.
Oh.
You can have it in your big boxing gloved hand, but you can't throw it like a champ. Yeah.
So Sasquatch puts up a decent fight. Wonder Man just decides, like, I'm going to start ripping up the ring. And that gets him disqualified in, like, oh, that gives us a 5-minute intermission.
Well, they had to fix the ring.
But, like, it adds nothing really to the story. However, the biggest cop-out in this is the Hulk. The Hulk is, like, ready and raring to go, and he's going to smash him. And he just goes, ah, I'm not going to see my hands with a brute like you. Be gone. It's like, what? I want to see the Hulk and this guy throw down.
No, this is all about the Thing.
I get what you're saying, but, like, the Hulkster could have softened him up a little bit.
See, the one thing that I'm surprised you didn't mention first was when Cyclops and Wolverine sneak in their disguises and their tiny hats.
Well, and Wolverine was... No, well, they weren't tiny hats. Wolverine was wearing his full costume, but with Gilligan's hat on over it. That's disguise.
And trench coats, and Cyclops has his visor and a fedora on.
Right.
They don't look skeevy coming through the door at all.
Right, the two most conspicuous guys in the world.
Like, hey, excuse me?
And then the other thing is, the Thing is given his, like, pre-match, his psyching him up, his self-up promo, he's like, maybe I'm not the toughest, maybe I'm not the strongest, the guy that the champions ever fought, but I ain't going down easy. He's going to know he's been in a fight. Bone-crushing brawl like never before. Bet on it. Now, obviously, you could have just put in there, like, some Hard Times, Dusty Rhodes-style promos. And then the other thing that I bring up a lot of questions about is he's taping up his fists. First of all, his fists are made of solid rock. Is the tape just to keep his fist from breaking apart? And
well,
then
he put
gloves
on him, too.
Right, and he put the gloves on, too. But I also recently learned from a wrestler that you hold in very high regard, or maybe he was just trying to troll people, that said that if you're a wrestler and you tape your fists up, it doesn't make any sense because then you're doing less damage kayfabe to your opponent. Which, that makes no sense. But anyway.
What you want to do is you don't want to scuff your knuckles. That's really what it comes down to.
Right. And then as the Thing continues to take a beating, the ring gets broken again. They don't pause it so he can get things taken care of. Then he's starting to get bruises on rocks. And then there's a ghastly scene where I think the Thing is in very bad shape because there's a part in the story where blood is just pouring out of his mouth. And it's not like a trickle of blood. A waterfall of blood is coming out of his mouth.
It is. He's okay. He's the thing. He's got extra blood.
Right. Is it radioactive?
No, because then you'd be turned into you'd get the proportional powers of a rock.
And the other thing is, so, you know, the whole gimmick is that no one's been able to last a round with this guy, and the thing lasts 3 rounds with him.
Mm-hmm.
The thing continues till his body physically cannot go any longer. He says, "I'm just too stupid to quit." And the champion says, "I could crush your bones and break your body, but would never be able to conquer your spirit."
That makes Thing look strong there.
Right. That's a way to get over in losing.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, I enjoyed this very much in the very 80s throwback feel of this. From the cover to the art to everything, a delightful comic I implore you as listeners of this show to go check out.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites growing up.
So, my pick for this week, not one of your favorites for growing up. Maybe you're probably still growing up.
I am.
We're all still children.
Oh, you have no idea.
My pick for this week is issue 18 of Preacher.
Oh, man, why have to be Preacher issue?
Mm-hmm. I know you...
Around...
You watch that fantastic TV show, the least you could do is... remind yourself that this property is actually good.
Oh, I was hoping we would have your story for Easter, but that's a whole other story.
It's close enough. Palm
it is.
Sunday, maybe?
I don't know. I think it's Good Friday. I don't know.
But no, this is one of the stories of Jesse's father in Vietnam and how Jesse got his famous lighter.
Some sort of communism lighter.
Yes. It says, fun communism.
Thought it said funk. Terry Tuesday, so.
Oh, it was Terry Tuesday yesterday. How dare you?
That's right. I forgot.
So that'll be up in a post on Longbox Heroes this Thursday. And is there anything else that I'm missing before we get into TV talk?
I can't think of any. You remembered next week's book, so I think we're good.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
We're going to get into TV talk here in just a matter of moments. If you did not watch The Flash, did not watch Legend of Tomorrow, Walking Dead, or don't care about these shows, we bid you adieu, and we will catch you all here next week, and then we'll take a moment to get into TV talk. All right, TV talk. Let's start with The Flash. This episode of The Flash has a new villain in it who does not have speed powers.
Thank God.
It is Abracadabra. And he comes and uses all of his 64th century technology, which we dumb 21st centuries think is magic.
Right.
Which is part of his gimmick. And he offers to reveal who Savitar is to Barry if they let him go. Catch him.
Right.
And that's really the main thing that happens in this. The other subplotty stuff isn't jumping out at me. There's a thing where, like, Caitlin's skewered and she needs to have what's-his-face from the Slytherin house.
Mm-hmm.
Do surgery on her to save her. But even then, that doesn't work, and then they have to turn her into Killer Frost. Spoilers for a couple weeks from now. But the main thing is Abracadabra and the decision whether or not they let him go to save everyone, knowing who Savitar is.
Right.
I like the Abracadabra stuff. I like the guy who plays him. He's just suitably douchey enough to be not likable.
Right.
And he's not like a cool villain, you know? Because mm-hmm. he's kind of a jerk, and right. he looks like a jerk, like you just want to punch him in the face.
With the goatee and all.
Mm-hmm. But I like this episode.
I did too. I'm a huge Abracadabra fan, and I'm starting to understand that I can't have everything exactly the way I want it as it starts out. Do you know what I mean? Like Flash had the red thing under his lightning bolt for the first season, and
right.
You know, and things evolve and become. But I'm like, no, I'm a Flash fan. I want everything the way it is in the comics right now. So I hope like Abracadabra evolves, because I want to see the fact that he's pulling off crimes and making people clap for it. Because there's not, because I think in live action it'll be really creepy to be like, hey, I murdered your whole family, and they're just like clap, 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 claps and smiling. That'll be really cool. I do love the old Abracadabra, where, you know, the Silver Age Abracadabra in comics was, he was a take on magicians. So he had like the top hat and the tails and the twirly mustaches. Now he's more of the David Blaine douchey, like you said, street magician. And I get it for what, but I would have loved to see him in a top hat. Like just the stereotypical old-timey magician, but I'm cool with that. And now he is the third best villain on the Flash show, because Reverse Flash, Heatwave, Abracadabra, Captain Cold. What?
I disagree.
Of course you do. I'm ranking them the right way.
But at least they did not make Abracadabra a Chris Angel type magician.
Oh my god, that would have been terrible.
That would have been much, much worse. But Flash was good. It's off for a couple weeks as we build to the big season finale there. Speaking of building to season finales, the penultimate episode of Legends of Tomorrow, entitled Doom World, trademark, where the Legion of Doom used the Spear of Destiny to rewrite history where they're in charge, somehow made the horrible mistake to keep everyone around, which they shouldn't have done, which was always the wrong thing to do. Some people are employed by them, some people aren't, some people are in menial jobs to mock them, some people are in menial jobs to use them to the best of their abilities, but the most important thing is, some of them get terrible wigs.
I was hoping they were calling his episode Wig World.
Oh my goodness. So there's the part in the very beginning of the episode where White Canary and Vixen are chasing down this world's Black Canary, who we find out later is Felicity Smoak, wearing a fantastic wig. Yuck. And there's, while they're running and fighting her on the rooftops, she jumps down like a fire escape, and they show a grisly close-up of her just snapping her ankle. Right. But then she just gets up and she's fine.
What happened?
Oh my goodness.
She finished the match.
Right. Oh my goodness. So they bring her back, and, you know, she gets killed. And of course, there's still, dissension amongst the other Legion Boomers, because they have the evil Black Fat Flash like locked up somewhere, so Eobard's okay, but they still don't trust each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's still that sort of dissension. And then all of a sudden, Nate Haywood, also wearing a slightly less fantastic wig than Felicity Smoak was wearing, he shows up as like a weird conspiracy theorist who's figured out, or thinks he's figured out, what they've done. And then as he starts explaining to them what they've done, he's like, uh-oh, they're onto us. We shouldn't have let them survive in this world. And then, of course, they all come together and they, you know, try to get their plot together, but they need to find Rip. And Rip is right under their nose in a bit of inspired planning. And I also want to give the writers and performers on this show kudos for pronouncing fondant correctly.
What's fondant?
You know when Rip is inside the ship and he's making cakes?
Right.
And he's talking about his fondant work?
Right.
And Gideon also says that, oh, the fondant work is much better on this one than your previous three efforts or whatever it is that she says. Mm-hmm. Fondant is a kind of icing that's kind of like a malleable, sticky thing that you could do more with. And because of terrible shows on the Food Network, people have taken to calling it fondant.
Fondanto.
Right, not fondanto, one of the hot cops.
Right.
But actually calling it fondant instead of fondant, because they want to make what they're doing sound more impressive.
Mm-hmm. The best part of that, though, is he put a bow tie on the top, which I think was a nod to his time as a companion to the 11th Doctor. I really do.
Shouldn't it have been like medical scrubs or a scalpel or something if it was an ode to a doctor?
Ode to a doctor, yes. Well, it was called Doomworld.
Right, that's a thing from Doctor Doom, right?
Right, yes.
But, I really like this episode. I'm kind of giving a little bit of grief because of the tropes and everything and how they, mm-hmm. you know, the bad guys, of course, make the fatal flaw of keeping their enemies still around, the lovely wig and everything else like that. But I really like this episode a lot.
I really like this episode, too. I love the fact that as Mick does his face turn again, that he decides, you know, to free everybody. And as each one of them out of their, like, you know, hypnotic state, they all punch him in the face. And he's cool with it. But then he's like, the next one. I'm killing the next one. And it just reminded me of, like, Jack Sparrow. Like, I deserve that. I may have deserved that. It just kept going. And Eobard getting the voiceover in the opening,
yes,
was fantastic. I'm like, this is great. And then we got Star Labs looks like the Legion of Doom headquarters. I'm like, just so we've had the Justice League, we've had the Legion of Doom, and as it's open, I can't even. I see Felicity Smoak,
right?
And I'm like, all right, she's been a brunette before on Arrow, so I've seen that before. And then they do the close up on Nate. And I'm like, all right, I have to bust out the Twitter, give Joe a notification of what's coming, because I know he hasn't watched it yet. And I'm just warning that if I'm saying the wig work is bad, he is going to be delighted with Nate's haircut.
Maybe this looks better in, like, SD or something. Maybe, like, if I was, like, looking kind of sideways at the TV when they were on, it might have made, I don't know.
While you're squinting.
Right.
And have like
I'm viewing the wigs the same way that you would view an eclipse.
Through a pinhole.
Yes.
This is my pinhole for viewing Legends of Tomorrow wigs.
You know what, now see, maybe, Todd, this is all an elaborate scheme that maybe over the summer, or, you know, whenever you would, they do a tour on one of the conventions. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, come get your picture taken with the wigs of Legends of Tomorrow.
They get a villain called the Stylist. Yes. It's like, here they are. Here's the Nate wig. Here's the George Lucas. You get the beard with the George Lucas, so that's an extra $10 to get your picture taken with it.
Don't get the, what's his fame name for the Doctor Who that I watched the other day?
What?
The Doctor Who with the fake mustache.
Oh, the Brigadier. Yeah, we can get the Brigadier's real mustache.
Mm-hmm.
Real mustache. And then you could also have the tiny hat expedition. Expedition. Exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
Abdominal stretch. So, yes, so we could have all that. And I would pay. I would go see it all.
Again, like I said, we kind of give it a hard time, but it was a really good episode of Legend of Tomorrow. I'm very excited and sad that it's already the season finale this week, and we'll be talking about that next week.
Right, before we started the show, to peel back the curtain, just like, do you know it ends next episode? And I'm like, yeah. And there's no Flash next week either, so it's crazy, crazy time for DC shows.
And no Walking Dead, because this was the season finale this past weekend.
Beautiful segue, Joe.
Yes, yes. I'm just reading from the script that you typed up intricately on your brother P-Touch, whatever, whatever.
That's right. I got an old-timey typewriter.
Changing the ribbon. It's missing a Z.
Oh.
So Rick has everyone working together for his plan. Alexandria is going to take down Negan. They still kind of sort of trust Dwight, but they trust him enough to let him go. Back again, and Daryl's like, oh, if he comes back, you know, and this doesn't work out, I'm going to kill him. And Rick's like, well, you know, if it doesn't work out either way,
this is all over.
Right, it's all over anyway. So then the Junkticons come to Alexandria.
In their garbage trucks, which are fantastic.
In their garbage trucks. They all get armed, they're all ready. Now, while this is going on, because, you know, Dwight tips them off that Negan's coming in a day. So you have a day to get ready. You have a day to lay all whatever it is that you're doing. He's coming to you, so you take him down. So Negan has other plans. He's been working on Sasha while we're getting Sasha's fever dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really know why until the very end why we're getting these fever dreams. But I guess it's one of it's her remembrance of one of the last times that she got to be with Abraham.
Where she begged him not to go on the trip to
right.
to take Maggie to the doctor where bad things happened.
Now, this is the guy with the bow tie or the scarf that you're talking about now?
This is the scarf one.
A real doctor.
Yes, yes. Not an MD, if you will.
Oh, okay.
Not a TV doctor, an MD doctor.
So, I don't know, like, obviously there were no clues prior to this. But they tipped it off, I think, a little bit too early that the Junkticons were going to turn on Rick and his crew.
It happened for me.
Yeah.
When Michonne was on the roof.
Yep.
And the one Junkion looked out and goes, like, she's like, I'm going to go over there, more line of sight. And the one Junkion goes, me, very accurate, bang, bang, me go over there. And she's like, okay. And he's like, and she goes, like, we're going to win. And I'm like... ooh, like that was too ominous. And then it reminded me of the Andrea scene from the comic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember like where she, like the whole thing where they think Michonne falls out the window, but it's really the Junkion where here, you know, in the comic, we thought it was Andrea, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, they're not going to give that scene away. I think keep that. And then I was like, well, who would get up there? And I'm like, the Junkions are going to turn and that's what's going to happen. So I kind of saw it coming a little early. And I think the whole Sasha thing with the pill was given away a little bit when Negan brings her out for the ride.
Right.
And did we see a soft spot with Negan for a second?
We've seen a couple soft spots in the back half of the season on Negan.
Honestly, when he's with her and he's like, "All right, we're going," he's like, "Honey, like you don't have to ride in that the whole way." She's like, no, I want it. And he has a legitimate look of like, you don't have to do this. Like Negan, who's like, do what I say or vampire bat all the way.
Well, he has been, you know, since the last episode where they picked up Sasha, he's been real working her hard. And this episode was like the first time where a little bit of the actual Negan shone through. But he saw her as an asset, someone who would be someone useful to his crew. So I think that's why he was kind of buttering her up and trying to treat her not so much as an equal, but not treat her the same way that he treats everyone else.
I don't know. I just got it that he's like, this is a horrible way to do the whole ride, and you shouldn't have to do it, especially because you're betraying your friends. I don't know. It was just a weird soft moment for me that seemed not fake by him. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know. I kind of liked it.
So... as they're on their way, Eugene says, let me see if I can talk to him in his special Eugene way.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole plan was they're going to show up, Negan and his crew, and they have a bunch of explosives armed in like a little trailer right by them. So when Negan shows up, they're going to get a detonator, it's going to blow up, and Bob's your uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Eugene shows up, he makes his plea, says, hey, we can do this a different way without as many of us getting killed. Rick gives the signal for him to blow things up. It doesn't blow up. That's when we get the reveal that the Junkions have turned on them. Negan shows up, cuts an impassioned 15-minute Negan promo with the reveal end up being, essentially, you give us all your stuff. All these guns. I know you got all these guns. Give me the pool table. Give me everything you got. And... you, Rick, have to pick one person for me to kill, or I have your friend Sasha in his coffin, and I'm going to kill her.
Right.
Swerve, coffin opens up. The reason Sasha was having, like, crazy fever dreams and all this other stuff inside the coffin is because the pills that Eugene gave her last week, she took so that she would die, and then when they do the big reveal of the coffin... anybody who debuts coming out of a box is over, especially when that person is now a zombie and tries to kill Negan, which I thought was a bit of inspired writing, inspired acting, and I thought that was very noble of Sasha as her last act and her last ditch effort to try to take Negan out.
And it's sad because it was to no avail.
But you know what? You got to try, man. You got to try. Think outside the box, man.
Or, well, she was brought in the box, so that's you got to think outside it, like you said. But I thought that was really cool. And then that goes all sideways. So he goes in. He's like, all right, I was supposed to do this and pick somebody, but this has ticked me off enough that I'm taking Carl before, you know, I'm not having you pick. I'm taking Carl, and then I'm breaking your hands. I'm taking your hands, which is like the 90th time we've been threatened with Rick losing a hand throughout this series. That's the one thing that I think has to go is to keep teasing us that Rick is going to lose a hand. But they're like, we're going to kill Carl, and I'm going to take your hands. And then another impassioned speech of Rick, like, you can kill my son in front of me, and you can take my hands, but I'm somehow going to kill you, and you believe it. Then luckily the cavalry comes over the hill just as they're about to kill Carl and take Rick's hands. And Negan has the most believable reaction yet in Walking Dead that there's a tiger attacking his men. I love, oh my God, it's a tiger. And he just starts running. It's my favorite Negan moment right now in the series.
So it was very good. I thought it was a good episode. I was kind of not feeling it, you know, but they were setting everything up.
Right.
I need to trust them more.
Well, you know what? They've lost our trust with season finales, with hour and a half season finales, with not an hour and a half of...
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
With not an hour and a half of story. This was slow at times, but it was all needed to tell the story. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So in the end, it was like, all right, maybe I wasn't as into it in the beginning, but if you had cut all this, the ending wouldn't have been good. So it works, where a lot of times it was like, oh, we're just adding stuff to a season finale that, you know, just to get extra minutes out of it. And I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Negan giving the finger as he's driving away was pretty too. And Jerry and Simon survived. So I'm cool.
Okay. So, my only real complaints, my only real complaint about this is not enough Simon.
Right.
Should have had more Simon in the episode. He's the best. Secondly, I loved the music in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Love the music in this episode. It was so much like the George Romero zombie movies that I grew up watching. So much. Loved it.
I'll have to take your word on that.
Yeah, buddy.
But I really enjoyed it all around.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to All Out War.
As am I. So I guess, is there anything else that we need to talk about here?
No, I think that's everything.
All right. So, thank you for bearing with us. Thank you for listening to Unbox Heroes, episode 340. This was a long one. We appreciate you hanging in there. The next three episodes are going to be a little bit shorter, back to their normal length with the lack of TV shows that are going to be on. So,
right.
You have that to look forward to.
Unless Legends has awesome wig work, we might go along.
Right. We might do a retrospecticus of the wigs.
Oh, in memory of the wigs of season two of Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so for Todd, this is Joe, closing on episode 340 of Long Box Heroes, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.